Hello and welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly podcast. This week we are talking about a looming showdown amongst the top contenders for the DA position of leader. They are, of course, the official opposition in the country. There are also calls for the Interministerial Committee on COVID to be dissolved. This coming from the MKMVA earlier today. We'll also talk through some of the concerns from donors regarding much-needed personal protective equipment, possibly not reaching the intended recipients given allegations of alarming abuse of procurement protocols within government. So that's what we'll be discussing today. As always, please do not forget to subscribe on Iona FM, Spotify, Apple, and other platforms where you get your podcasts. My name is Thembile. I'm joined today by Apiwe and Mawande of the Sunday Times political team.
This econ is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whiteness.
Order!
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a shape.
At arms, can you please come
on the
in?
Point of order.
I must ask the two comrades if they've gotten their first sip of holy waters, which as of today are legally available in stores. Apiwe.
No, I'm quite sober today.
You see, it makes for a nice change.
No comment.
No one, have you made your way to the bottle stores as of yet?
Comrades, me, I stopped this drinking business, you know, because I know we can't trust NTZ and Pekicele and their opposition to this thing. They will close it again, so what's the point? I'm sober forever and ever, comrades.
I'm not sure I believe that, but it's fine. We'll support your current decisions. As of today, a number of previously restricted activities obviously now have the green light from government. Things like going to the gym, drinking in restaurants, and for the smokers, almost 5 months later, tobacco products are now available. So that's what happens today as of level two in the country. But let's start our discussions with an announcement by a candidate from the Democratic Alliance. She's also the former youth leader, currently an MPL in the KZN legislature, Mbali Ntuli. In case you missed it, here's what she had to say in a press conference yesterday.
I think that members of the DA and our public in particular are tired of politicians who operate behind closed doors and under the cover of darkness, and who don't avail themselves for reasonable scrutiny and to be held accountable for many of the views that they hold. And this must change. And that is why I am challenging Mr. John Steenhuisen to a series of four live televised Democrat debates in keeping with the great liberal tradition.
So that was the DA's Mbali Ntuli. She yesterday challenged the interim leader, John Steenhuisen, to a series of public debates, four of them leading up to their virtual elective conference, which is set to take place later this year. What you missed before the clip that we just played for you now was where she speaks about this tradition happening in American politics in the main in the run-up to their elections, where candidates challenge each other to these public debates so that people can get a better sense of what they stand for. And obviously, in the case of the DA, it's an internal election, so they might argue that it's got nothing to do with the rest of us. But Apiwe, what is your sense on this challenge and how it might go down in the party?
I think now more than any time before, it would be important for the party to actually hold the public debate, given the situation we find ourselves in with COVID-19 and the lockdown. For fairness, I think it would present an opportunity for members across the board to not just get information only through official channel. I understand when you are not the incumbent, it's difficult to have a similar reach to members as the incumbent. So when you have a debate like that, it would really then assist. And you must understand that with internal elections, it's not just as the matter of the delegates who are going to vote, but it's also about the people that who are supporters, who are members, how they view their leader to be. I understood that argument when Helen Zille was going head-to-head with Athol Tolib last year for the position of the chairperson of the Federal Council, because that position in itself is not even elected by the rest of the members, but by the members of the Federal Council. So, but this one is the leader of the party, is the person who's going to the face of the DA, is the person who's going to represent the party going forward in elections and so on. So it's not just about that sentiment that as supporters, as voters of the DA, they would want to have a leader that they trust and they can see what the views are and if they align with them, even though they would not necessarily be voting on the day, even though it's only just members of members or delegates who would be presented there. So it's supposed to be this way, I think. This is my understanding of politics, that those who are delegates are then especially those who are nominated at press level, but even those who are public reps, that when they go there, they take a mandate, or rather they represent their own constituencies. So not everyone from that constituency is going to be able to be voting at Congress, but they are able to influence the delegates that are going there as well to say, but based on what we have seen in those debates, we think that so-and-so is a better candidate for us in this constituency. These are the things that we think resonate with us, and that's my understanding of the necessity of a public debate. It's something that a lot of people have been saying about the current ruling party, which is the ANC, to say you can't just have secretive campaigns where you don't really know where the person stands. And with the DA, they've had it before with Musima Emane and Dr. Wilmot James. I'm not sure how much it helped to sway the support in favor of Musi. But then versus now, I think it's more important now than it was then. Then it was important to have that debate at the time, but a lot of people had known that it's a done deal for Musi Maimane, given who was backing him. But now, even if you think or believe that Jane Hazen has got an upper hand, but given that there's not equal access to the number of delegates because of the restrictions that have been there in traveling and so on, a public debate would play a lot in assisting or ensuring that democracy prevails.
Apio, you rightly mentioned that there was talk last year when there was a special sitting of the Federal Council to appoint a new person of new chairperson rather of the Federal Council, and at the time it was Helen Zille against Athol Tolib. There was a planned public debate, which at the last minute the party decided would not be in its best interest. As you say, in 2015, there was a debate which took place between Musima Emane and Wilmot James when they were vying for the top job as well. Let's take you back to 2015, debates on a show called Insig between Wilmot James and Musima Emane.
There's no doubt about the fact that many South Africans are left out of the economy, and the majority of those are in fact black. It is still a critical factor. It's still a proxy for disadvantage. And the issue that we must focus on is the fact that we must address the education of young black South Africans. The fact of the matter is that a child who's in Waterkloof gets a better education than a child who's in Mamelodi. So I think when it comes to economic redress, we must have a five-year plan that addresses, that measures how we're doing on that basis. But that what we've got to be focused on is making sure that we focus on black advancement and making sure that young black South Africans can find equity into the economy.
Dr. James?
Race still matters. It's not credible to say it doesn't matter anymore, but it matters less, but it still matters. There are two things to worry about. The first is what you do in terms of the backlog when it comes to educational qualifications, and I believe we need corrective action in the sense that we must make sure that there's accelerated training and education for people who were excluded in the past and disadvantaged.
So that was Wilmot James and Musima Emane back in 2015. Of course, for the upcoming challenge within the party, it's a three-way race, can we call it that? But it is John Steenhuisen and Balintuli, and the person that's not been mentioned by Balintuli in a challenge is the Gauteng leader of the party, John Muri, who she has decided to leave out. Mawande, would you take up this challenge if you were John Steenhuisen? And what are the sort of considerations do you think he'd have to make in accepting the challenge?
Thanks, Jay. I think if I were John Steenhuisen, I wouldn't take this challenge. And here is why I wouldn't. We have previously discussed the policy confusion within the DA, such that they really don't know where they stand. Funny enough, that the clip that we just listened to with Musi Maimane talking about black advancement, if I to quote him, is actually the same reason that led to his downfall. It led to his election and once again led to his downfall, because in reality, that is not the politics of the DA. And John Steenhuisen, at this point in time, does know that the politics of transformation are not the priority business of the DA. Therefore, if he were to take this challenge of the public debate with Mbadi Ndudi, it would really expose him. And I think John Steenhuisen, as an ambitious fellow that he is, wanting to lead this DA going forward, he wouldn't want to do anything that would jeopardize his chances of actually rising to that position, which he currently holds on an interim basis. He would want to cement his position on a permanent basis. And we know his alignment with Helen Zille. Helen Zille, who is credited for Musi Maimane's fall, well, she was credited for his rise and once again for his fall, as the DA now is turning to, you know, to its original self of being a pure liberal party. So it wouldn't favor John Steenhuisen, because he would then have to be politically correct, and I don't think that would serve his purpose going forward, and that of the broader DA, by the way. And Mbali, knowing the kind of country that we are and the challenges that we are facing, particularly as Africans in this country, she would take advantage of advancing that line, which was the same line that was advanced by Musi Maimane at that time, which would earn her favor with the delegates to the conference. So if I were John Steenhuisen, I would simply reject the offer, an offer which is sane in the bigger scheme of things, because as Apio alluded to, I think it is in South Africa we tend to have this attitude that internal party debates are only for members of that party, but it is these parties that go on to represent the broader public in parliament, who vote on policies in parliament. And most of them, we don't even know what they stand for. The ANC is guilty of the same crime, in that other than cadres forums heading to their elective conferences, they never have proper public debates where people will make proper assessments. Even when the ANC has elected so-and-so, at least when we go to general elections, you know that because of the views that this guy had or this lady had advanced during the debate to their elective conference, I do not think that their view align with my aspirations and that of my family and a whole lot of other people. So I think it is a culture that we ought to really entertain in the broader scheme of things in South Africa, to get to understand our leaders better. I can bet you now, very few people actually know the politics of John Steenhuisen. Very few people know the politics, individual politics of Mbadi Ndudi. Same goes for the ANC. Very few people know the personal views, political views of President Cyril Ramaphosa. Very few people know the personal political views of ANC SG, Ace Magashule. And that is, I think, is a problem in the bigger scheme of things, which I think also drives to voter apathy, because people never want to vote not knowing who are the kind of people who are leading these parties and what is it that they stand for. Is that in line with the aspirations that I have in terms of the country moving forward? So I think in that particular aspect of public debates, Mbadi Ndudi has a point that we've got to get into that stage of getting to understand. For instance, in America, it's a long-standing culture. The people who voted for the current president, Donald Trump, they voted exactly knowing what he stands for, because it was never a secret. It was ventilated in the Republican conventions and the public debates that go on. And right now, for the upcoming elections in America, those debates have begun last night. It was the Democrats' convention. At least we get to understand who is Joe Biden. We will get to see who is Trump. Has he changed from what he was before, or does he still remain the same? I think that is very vital, to get to understand the personal views of the leaders that seek public office instead of the political party views of the parties that they belong to. Stay.
Apio, given that you have a sort of bird's eye view over the politics within the DA, how do you think this request will go down, and what will it mean for John's campaign to either accept or deny Bali the chance to have this public debate?
His initial reaction was that he would follow party protocol or policy on public debates on the matter, which was quite confusing for me because when someone calls you out on a debate, you say, okay, my stance on the matter is this and this and this and that. And being the current leader of the party, surely you are allowed to stand and have your views about such matters, about debates. I think, yes, it's an opportune time for us if I were him, or say no, I think it's a waste of time to have debates, because this is, you see what I mean? Instead of outsourcing it to the party or the person who's responsible for the running of elections, whom I just forget her name. She's an MP, and she does a very good job, by the way, of making sure that campaigns are not don't degenerate and become negative. But I mean, you as a leader of the party, you could just stand there and say, "Oh, this is my belief on debates. Yes, it's a good thing, or no, it's not a good thing. It won't assist us." But that said, I would let the party decide. And aside, I've once attended another debate for the at the time it was a leadership race in Western Cape, the biggest province and one of the most important, if not the most important for them. At the time, the current leader was in a race against Lenit Max. I would tell you that when I went to the debate, there's nothing new that I learned after that debate from both candidates that I had not known before the debate itself. So maybe there's also that to be considered about debates. Let's see how this one pans out.
And then corruption, the gift that seemingly keeps on giving. I think it may as well be a weekly segment that we have on this podcast, in so much as the topic relates to COVID-19 graft, allegations of corruption, proved corruption, comrades, friends and family members of the ruling party benefiting from the procurement process with regards to personal protective equipment. And others in the party have even raised concerns that the investigation into this graft or corruption should not be limited to PPE, but also should be extended to other things which have been procured over the past few months, including infrastructure for field hospitals and so on. This was something that was raised during a press conference, which, Mawanda, you attended earlier this morning, by the MKMVA. Let's start by listening in on what Kevin Mapadzwa had to say on the recently formed Interministerial Committee on COVID-19.
For the sake of the restoration of the credibility of the ANC, MKMVA insist and call upon the president, our president, that he must act decisively against all the COVID-19 emergency fund looters, no matter what their proximity to him may be. He certainly has the constitutional powers to do so, and he has the Special Investigation Unit and other security agencies at his disposal to act immediately. The MKMVA is perplexed about the role that the announced Interministerial Committee will play, except to get involved in parallel work and thus muddy the waters. MKMVA therefore calls for the Interministerial Committee to be dissolved and for the security agencies to be allowed the freedom to do their work without any interference or hindrance.
So that's a little bit of what was said during this morning's MKMVA press conference on the outcomes of a sitting of its National Executive Committee over the weekend. Also, what happened over the weekend was the ambassador to the United States, to South Africa rather, from the United States, Lorna Marks, expressed concern about COVID-related corruption in the country as she was handing over a consignment of PPE. She said that there has been corruption and it's very disappointing. It does need to be overcome in South Africa. We're delivering this to certain regions, to folks on the ground. And by that, she basically meant that they're going to bypass government distribution channels to do this themselves. At least that's how I understood it to be, because of how bad corruption has gotten in the country. Apia, what does it say about us that people have to take such extraordinary measures when handing over life-saving equipment?
It's embarrassing, Ste. Very embarrassing. There's no other way to describe it. It's embarrassing. It shows us as people who do not care about the well-being of the broader South Africans. It shows in the world stage, it shows that we can't be trusted with any money. And you know, when you are at a stage where you find yourselves begging from the international markets, or rather, from the likes of IMF and stuff, because of how we have screwed up our economy, as well. I mean, it just makes the picture of South Africa and corruption worse. Generally, we are the only country, or rather, we are one of the very few countries who are embroiled in corruption scandals that relates to money that has to do with COVID-19. It's very embarrassing, Esther. There's no other way to explain it further than that. It just makes me ashamed to be a South African. And I understand anyone who would not trust us with their money if you, after reading the stories that they read, I understand why anyone would say, okay, our heart is in a good place, we want to assist, but we can't trust the politicians. I understand it very well. And you know, when you have a scandal that has, it's quite a serious matter when you have a scandal that involves the person who is the mouth of the leader of the country. And it got even worse when Gauteng was the province where this was being done, because Gauteng was one of those provinces that was seen as the last hope in terms of clean governance, in terms of fight against corruption. So when you hit those levels, you can't just trust anyone. So it's very embarrassing. It's painful to see it unfolding like this. If I may comment maybe on the likes of the MKMVA. I mean, it's funny how it's the MKMVA now who are coming out as the seemingly voice of reason, where they were one of the organizations who played a big part in assisting the country to find itself in the current lows that we are in during their leaders' participation in the previous administration's corrupt ways. And outsourcing the country to a few business people in Saxonwood.
So I want to come back to the politics of the MKMVA and their role in the last administration under former President Jacob Zuma. But for now, since the Minister of Justice and Correctional Services announced the establishment of this interministerial committee, there's been a lot of controversy around its role, what it's going to be doing, how it's going to be doing it. And today, the MKMVA have come out to say dissolve it completely. Mawande, your thoughts on this request from the structure?
Well, I never thought this would happen, but I must be honest, I agree with the stance of the MKAVA. Yes, it's one thing as to who is saying it, but the logic of it all, I think it resonates with my view, which has been, by the way, a long-held view before their briefing today, that there was no need at all to form this interministerial committee, because we have law enforcement agencies in the country which have a job to investigate, that being the SARS. NPA has a job to prosecute, and our courts have a job to convict or acquit those who are accused who appear before the courts. So I really never understood what was this jumping up and down like popcorns, forming interministerial committees and all those things. Therefore, really, it was, for me, it was confusing from the get-go. It was one of the ways that I viewed as some sort of a cover-up, because if then politicians are involved and politicians have got their own ambitions of political offices who would seek to protect certain comrades that are aligned to them and their interests and seek to ban those that are their enemies and a threat to their individual interests. So it was really, to be quite frank, a very, you know, stupid decision, to if I may put it that way. So I agree with the MKAVA that this interministerial committee must be dissolved forthwith without any delay, and let the legitimate constitutional and legal law enforcement agencies like the SABs, the Hawks, the NPA, and our esteemed courts to do their job. If the NPA, there is evidence against certain individuals, it must approach the courts and say, we have a strong case, they get a date, they prosecute, go to trial, the judge listens. If people are guilty, they will be convicted. But yeah, we know that in South Africa, that's not how we operate. It is always a political, even in clear-cut cases. For instance, I would think that with regards to the case of the DIGOs and the Department of Health in Gauteng around the alleged corruption of PPEs, if there is evidence that there was a political lobbying, that this contract be given to the illegitimate king of Amabhaca, I think that is quite a clear-cut case if there's evidence to that effect, that proper procurement procedures were not followed, for NPA to pursue the case and take it to the courts and we have results, and then restore the confidence of the broader South African public that this country is not a banana republic, because as it stands, as far as action against corruption is concerned, it is a banana republic. The last high-profile politician was arrested for fraud and corruption charges was one John Block from one small province of the Northern Cape, former chairperson of the ANC that side. Since then, I don't remember a single political figure who has ever been tried. One, it's one thing to convict, tried for corruption, because sometimes you can try, and as comrades always insist that they are not guilty, let the courts be the ones that decide that. We are not interested in interministerial committees that have your colleagues and your integrity commission of the ANC that have got your comrades. Those are not structures that are in our constitution as a country. The NPA is there, the Hawks are there, SABs is there, our courts are there. So I simply agree with the MKAVA on this dissolution of the interministerial committee.
We're just about out of time, but Apu, remind us quickly why the MKMVA are an unlikely voice of reason during this time.
Just look at the leadership of the MKMVA. You've got the former deputy minister, Kebi Mapatswe, who, together with the former minister, or the so-called weekend special, Des Van Rooyen, who we had in that clip, as being the leaders of the MKMVA, they'd been a structure which, for the longest of time, they stood by President Jacob Zuma, and they benefited during his tenure as the president of this country. They and their links to the Gupta family are well documented. So in terms of being them being the voice of reason, yeah, well, maybe it will take some convincing from my side. From me, I think it's more about their factional politics and less about them being interested in the right thing being done, because they were never they never took similar stances when their man was in office. Why now? It's just politics from them. But anyway, any action.
I would like to add to what you're saying.
Okay. No, you can add. Look, when someone is calling for the right thing to be done, of course, we must support the right thing being done. But I'm just saying we must also be mindful of the reasoning or the thinking behind the political machinations that are pushing for these guys to stand up and have a voice on this matter.
Mawande, very quickly, you want to weigh in before we wrap up?
No, thanks. Well, Abiwe couldn't have put it much better. the MKAVA, in as far as, for instance, issues of factionalism and stuff like that are concerned, they are the last people to speak. We know that they were one of the biggest backers of former President Jacob Zuma. And for me, how I read today's briefing of theirs is that it is just, much as they were condemning factional battles within the ANC, NEC, that's what they were saying. Their act on its own and the core and the theme of that press conference was a factionalist approach in the best form possible, you know. And they, you could see there was an attempt to take a particular aim at President Cyril Ramaphosa, something that they never did with former President Zuma. And there was an attempt to clear the ANC SG Ace Magashule, who is seen to be aligned to them. I mean, PKB Mapuatso actually did comment around the issue of Ace Magashule's sons said to have benefited from a contract of PPEs in the Free State, saying that there's nothing wrong with family members of politicians doing business with the state. But just before that, this was the same guy who was saying President Cyril Ramaphosa campaigned on anti-corruption card and now he's not acting against corruption. So it was just a clear-cut chance that this is one of their factional, you know, behaviors as the MKVA. We know who they supported before Nasrec, it was definitely not President Cyril Ramaphosa. So theirs, much as some of the points that they raised are legitimate, but the act on its own, it was a fictional act, and I think it should be viewed as such.
So much to say, so little time. Thank you very much for tuning in. Please do follow this podcast on all major platforms, Iona FM, Spotify, Apple, and others. Thank you to Mawande and Apiwe for your insightful views on this week's episode.